Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
For a long time, many people have assumed that the best way to make their own life better was to make the world a better place, which actually sounds like a pretty good idea. In other words, if we could fix all of the problems in the world, and we have a few outside of us, all the problems that we see out there, then that would make us happy on the inside, where it counts. And if we could change the whole world everywhere enough in all the right ways, then everybody else's inside would be happy too. They wouldn't have anything to be unhappy about, so we could all live happily ever after, as the fairy tales promised. And in the process, not only would we enjoy ourselves more, we wouldn't have to feel guilty about anybody else either, because no one would be suffering if the world was fixed. We'd sort of have something close to heaven on earth, which everybody says they want. However, it's becoming more and more apparent that, at least so far, this approach doesn't work. Because a lot of people and organizations and government agencies all over the world are pouring massive amounts of time and energy and money and resources and food and medical assistance and all sorts of other stuff into the most difficult problems that we can imagine. And even though things do get a little better in some areas and a few people are helped, the problems themselves just don't seem to be going away. I mean, we see it all the time. You solve one problem and another one just as bad or worse pops up someplace else. We end a war here and another one pops up over there. We get rid of a dictator here and a person or an organization that's even worse pops up in their place. We solve mad cow disease and the birds get the flu. You know, the whole thing keeps moving around. It just seems to go on and on. So maybe we need to think about trying a slightly different approach, one that deals with the problems more at the spiritual level than the government level, so that we can stop feeling like we have to get involved at the military level. That's kind of a cycle we get into. And when I say we need to act at the spiritual level, I do not necessarily mean sitting back and praying for a better answer, though that couldn't hurt as long as we know how to pray intelligently. When I say a spiritual approach, I mean approaching our social and political and religious disagreements, which are the cause of a lot of this stuff, with the understanding that our relationships with other people are never person to person, they're always spirit to spirit. They are never really person to person, they're always spirit to spirit. The life force in me is interacting with the life force in you. So it's not really a physical relationship as much as it is a metaphysical relationship, which means over and above the physical, the stuff we see. That's important for us to always keep in mind. Because I believe that all of the problems in the world, whether they are medical problems, financial problems, social problems between individuals or individual groups, political problems between different nations or races or cultures or religions, I think they are either caused or exaggerated by the simple fact that we have not learned how to be kind to one another. We have not learned how to be kind to one another. So since we tried almost everything else, maybe it's time for us to try something different. Maybe it's time for us to try kindness on a massive scale and see what happens. See what happens. Because it certainly can't get a whole lot worse. That's what I want to talk about this morning. Now, for some people, maybe even some of you here, that may sound like a fairly naive suggestion, maybe even a little simplistic. You know, how do you expect everybody to be kind? But I assure you, it is not. In fact, it's a lot more difficult than it sounds. Because being constantly, and consistently kind to everyone all the time, no matter who they are or how they behave, no matter what kind of a day they're having or what kind of a day we're having, no matter how inconvenient it may be, all right, and whether or not anybody even notices that we're being kind, is not an easy thing to do. It's really not an easy thing to do, but it can accomplish a lot. There was a man many of you know by the name of Albert Schweitzer. Everybody know that name? You remember who he was? He did a lot of amazing work in Africa about 60, 70 years ago. He got the Nobel Peace Prize in 1952 when he died in 65. But he once said this. It's wonderful. He said, just like the sun makes ice melt, kindness causes misunderstanding, mistrust, and hostility to evaporate. Let me say that again. Just like the sun makes ice melt, kindness causes misunderstanding, mistrust, and hostility to evaporate. Now, I want you to notice that the three things he mentioned, misunderstanding, mistrust, and hostility, all right, these three big things, all of which cause a lot of problems in the world, are not physical qualities. They may show up in a physical way, but they are not physical qualities. They are mental and they are emotional, all right? And, not surprisingly, so are the things that can heal them. That's what's so great about this. Misunderstanding can be healed by communication. Mistrust can be healed by acceptance and instead of suspicion. And hostility can be healed by clarity and understanding. In all three cases, we exchange this one non-tangible idea for another intangible idea, and the problem is solved. It evaporates, as Dr. Schweitzer said. Now, as we all know, it's a lot more complicated than that. Or is it? That's the question, is it? The only reason we find it hard to adopt a new idea in place of an old one is because we've had the old idea longer. That's the only reason, okay? And we're used to it. We're used to the old idea. But when we start living and thinking and interacting with each other in a kinder and gentler way all the time, that's the key, all the time, it becomes easier to accept what we might call kinder and gentler ideas because it's easier. They make life easier. I mean, when we are kind to one another, we start to listen and we start to understand each other. We start to trust each other and we stop arguing with each other and we stop fighting against each other. And even though it may be hard to accept that all the problems that we're having today, whether it's in the Middle East or Africa or South America or in the good old US of A, could be eliminated by such a simple solution, I believe they can as long as we understand, here's the key, what true kindness really is, that's first, and as long as we practice it diligently in every situation. It doesn't do us any good to just know how to do something if we don't actually do it. So let me talk for a minute about what that might possibly look like. Now, the first and most important reason we should practice kindness is because it opens us up and lets the best of us out. It lets the best of us out. It shrinks our ego and it allows us to see there's a greater possibility than ever was there before, because we see the other person in a better way. And that's very, very important. Not only that, when we are kind, it puts us in a better mood, right? Everybody agree with that? We all know that. And it puts the person we're being kind to in a better mood also. In fact, anyone who observes an act of kindness ends up in a better mood. That's one of the keys to the success of Facebook right now. People putting all these things about being kind to puppies and kittens and the homeless and all this kind of stuff. That stuff gets swapped around the world in the blink of an eye, all right? I mean, how does it make you feel when in person you see somebody being kind to someone else, all right? When somebody gives someone else flowers unexpectedly, doesn't that make you feel good? Certainly makes me feel good, all right? We feel like we got flowers too. You know, it's kind of the same thing. When somebody helps an elderly person across the street, and I have to be careful with the word elderly as I approach 70. Anyway, we feel happy for both of them. We feel happy for both of them. That's the way most of us are wired. So kindness is extremely contagious, but it's not contagious like a disease. It's contagious like laughter. It's contagious like laughter. Our heart loves to be in the presence of kindness. Just like it loves to be in the presence of laughter, like those little laugh boxes that you hear and you just can't help joining in. Rabbi Harold Kushner, a very interesting man. He's written a lot of beautiful books. If you're not familiar with him, I highly recommend going on Amazon and getting any of his books. They're all wonderful. He once said, When you carry out acts of kindness, you get a wonderful feeling inside. It's as though something inside your body responds and said, yes, this is how I ought to feel. This is how I ought to feel. It's a very physical reaction. It's visceral, which means on a cellular level. All right, it's very, very noticeable. So, you know, I like to ask questions. If being kind to people feels so good and it makes everybody so happy, including us, then why aren't we doing it all the time? I mean, that's not a difficult question. You'd think we would be addicted to something that feels this good, because God knows we're addicted to everything else that feels good, all right? So why aren't we addicted to this? And the answer is obvious. It's obvious. The reason we don't do it more is because we don't think about it. It's really that simple. We just don't think about it. All right, kindness is not a priority on a daily basis. We get so caught up in our own day-to-day stuff that the last thing on our mind is how someone else is feeling, unless the way they feel affects us personally. Now, it isn't that we don't care about other people. I mean, most of you, I know many of you and have known you for years, most of us really do care. If we saw someone in pain, even if it was a stranger, years ago I was walking through one of the airports, I think it was Washington National, and an older woman who just stepped on the escalator fell down the escalator. And people rushed, absolutely rushed. People were holding her head. She was bleeding a little bit. She had bumped herself pretty good. And they were waiting for a doctor. People were calling security. It was just heartwarming. It was horrible seeing what happened to her, but it was heartwarming seeing all those people show up. All of us would probably do the same thing. All right, we'd stop to help as long as we didn't have an appointment we couldn't be late for, or a flight to catch, or something like that, right? But that in itself indicates part of the problem, because we are living our lives at such speed and with such intensity that we don't feel we have time to make a difference. We don't feel that, and that's sad, all right? It really is. It's sort of like, here's a visual most of you will probably identify with. You're driving on the interstate, pick your interstate or 400 or whatever it is, at 80 miles an hour when the speed limit's 55, all right? Welcome to Atlanta, which in itself tells you something. And right as you go, right out the corner of your eye, on the shoulder, you see this scared, hungry-looking dog. Everybody goes, oh, you know, okay, you got the visual, all right? Now, unless we have taught ourselves to be spring-loaded to the kindness position, by the time we think about doing something to help, we are 5 miles down the road with no place to turn around, okay? So we go through this mental process, we rationalize it, we say, I'm sure someone's going to stop and help, and we feel bad for a little while, and then we go on our way. All right, which brings up another reason why practicing kindness is important. If we commit to doing it consistently, it keeps us in the present. It keeps us in the present. That way, when we see something that needs to be done, we just do it. We don't go through this long, involved process. And you know the drill, you know, is there really a problem here? I wonder if somebody else is going to stop. Okay, do I have the time to stop? Can I make a difference? All right, all of this analysis that we go through, this intellectualizing, gets in the way. But when we are present and aware, okay, if we see someone in need, or a little puppy or whatever it is, we step in to help without a moment's hesitation. You immediately look, tap your brakes, pull over, back up, do whatever it is you need to do. It becomes automatic and it becomes immediate. And the really neat thing is, once we start doing this, people around us start doing it too. They get into the act. It's contagious. Other people start to do it. Now, you know how this works. If you live in a neighborhood where people automatically put away their neighbor's garbage cans or bring in their mail or bring in the newspaper for the elderly people and all this stuff, I've even seen people mow their neighbor's lawn or wash their neighbor's car. That kind of a closeness for somebody who's going through a tough time. They don't even think about it. They just do it. They just do it, all right? And they don't do it because they have the time. They do it because they want to do something nice for somebody they know is going to appreciate it. Very, very simple. Now, you may not know this. I didn't. I always do a little research in the internet. Back in 1995, so we're talking 20-plus years ago, there was an organization that was started here in the U.S. called the Random Acts of Kindness Foundation. Anybody familiar with that? We're all familiar with Random Acts of Kindness, but I didn't know there was a foundation. Okay, and it's really interesting. You can Google it. It's privately held and funded mostly anonymously, which is great. And it is the United States delegate to something that is called the World Kindness Movement. Who knew this stuff existed? Okay, I mean, don't you love what you find on the internet? Kind of fun. Now, I looked into what these organizations do, and it's absolutely wonderful. They don't preach, they don't criticize, they don't take a political stand. What they do is they provide ideas, resources, materials, and programs to schools, communities, and individual groups who request it, whose sole desire is to increase the amount of kindness being expressed in the world. Isn't that great? Absolutely wonderful. All they do is, these organizations, is they inspire people to practice kindness in the world and to pass it on, or to pass it forward even, we might say. That's it. So they provide ideas, lesson plans, project planning guides, all this stuff, all free of charge. They've even got a list of 100 kind things you can do, and it's pretty interesting. It's stuff you may not have thought of, like leaving cookies or flowers or something for the people who clean your office building during the night while you're gone. Very, very interesting things that you may not have thought about. They even have a part of their website where kids can work together to come up with their own 100 different ideas of ways to be kind, which is a great way to get keep kids thinking about it. I wasn't taught that when I was young, not directly. Now, it's a wonderful process that some very well-meaning people have created for no other reason than to make the world a better place, which is actually what our churches should be doing. Instead of deciding whether priests should be married or not, or who should marry who, or who God likes, and all this other stuff, all right? The Dalai Lama, who I absolutely admire deeply as one of our great, kind spiritual leaders now, along with Pope Francis. The new one, not the old guy. Okay, whatever. Anyway, the Dalai Lama says this. He said, "This is my simple religion. There is no need for temples, no need for complicated philosophy. Our own brain and heart is our temple, and the philosophy is kindness." Really, really wonderful, all right? I like it especially because it takes the idea of kindness one step further beyond the doing stage of doing kind things to the being stage, being kind, from which the actions result. You see, the truth is we can do nice things all day long, but what matters more is our attitude while we are doing it. In other words, are we doing it sort of from ego, a little bit selfishly, so we look good or feel good, or are we doing it selflessly as opposed to selfishly, just for the joy that it brings? Now, some people say it doesn't really make any difference, okay? If we help someone, if we're doing good things instead of mean things, it's probably a good thing and it makes a difference. But true kindness, so think, don't think of just the word kindness. Think of the word true kindness, almost like one word, is not so much an action as it is an attitude that gives a sense of beauty to all of our actions. You get the difference? It's a consciousness we would use in the language of these teachings. In other words, if we help someone out of a sense of obligation or guilt, it's probably better than not helping them at all, at least for them. But what does it do to us? That's what we have to think about. If we feel like we are being manipulated or coerced, like the person walking down the line of cars at the traffic light, that's probably a good example of that. If we feel like we're being coerced into doing something nice, even if it's a very subtle coercion, it's going to negatively affect the way we see that person. It just is. Instead of seeing them simply as someone who needs a hand, and we have a hand, you know, to provide, we're probably going to end up seeing them as a helpless victim who needs us. That's how it shifts our consciousness. And that's a very different level of interaction. It's very uneven. It's very imbalanced. It's not spirit to spirit. It's higher to lower, which is not nearly as good. That's why the Buddhists use the word loving kindness Almost like it's one single word, all right? Because love for other people and, let's throw this in, love for ourselves is the foundation, all right, for sharing our mutual strengths in order to balance out our temporary individual weaknesses, which we all have, which we all have. That kind of balance, equanimity, whatever you want to call it, between people, whether it's between friends or strangers or neighbors or nations, is how we demonstrate to one another this stuff that we talk about, that we're all one. That's how we demonstrate it, okay? All part of the same one life, the same one spirit. It's how we demonstrate that we know that we are all interconnected. Interconnected. That's why we need to get beyond thinking of kindness as nothing more than compassion or good manners. I mean, it definitely includes both of those, but it's so much more. So much more. Kindness is the glue that holds us together. All right? Kindness is the light that we shine on one another. In the old language of religion, it's the blessings we share with each other. It's the grace that we share with one another. It's the God in us recognizing the God in other people. That is what kindness is. Remember that story? It's an old story. Most of you have probably heard different versions. And it's about the man who died, and when he arrived at the pearly gates. We don't believe in pearly gates, but go with me on this. It's a metaphor, okay? And St. Peter asked him, "Hey, welcome. Would you like to go to heaven or would you like to go to hell?" Guy goes, trick question, right? Okay. He says, "Well, can I see them both before I decide?" St. Peter says, "Not a problem." So he takes him down to the room that is hell. And in it, there's this banquet table with all this delicious food. And these people are all sitting around it. And they all have spoons in their hand that are longer than their arm. So they're all trying, they get food on the spoon, but the spoon's way back here and they can't eat and they're crying and they're starving and hungry. So he closes the door and then he takes him to the room that's heaven and he opens it. It's the same banquet table with the same food and people are sitting around and they have these long spoons that are longer than their arm and they're all laughing and just enjoying this delicious food. You know why? Because they're feeding each other. They're feeding each other. Isn't that a great story? I love that story. I've loved it for years, okay? So that's what kindness does to us. It doesn't feed us as much as it allows us to feed one another. To feed one another. Now, part of the difficulty we encounter comes from the fact that people who are attracted to teachings like this one are usually extremely independent-minded people. I know that because if you weren't independent, you'd be going to your parents' church or your friend's church or something else. People who come here want to think on a slightly different direction, okay? Not only do we not like to think or do what other people think or do, we'll even think or do something different just because they're doing it, okay? That's the kind of people that are attracted here. I know you guys. I know you guys, okay? We believe in things like free will, the power of decision, and creating our own life experience, which can be very pretentious if you don't do it with the right sense of humility. Right, Ross? Okay. We believe in being independent. We do, spiritually independent. But we can only survive our independence by honoring the greater spiritual community that makes our independence possible. That makes it possible. You see, as citizens of the world, we're also citizens of this great country, most of us here, I assume, all right? But as citizens of the world, which means we're, all right, we are in a lateral community. We are part of a lateral community, which means we are connected to every person in the world who is alive right now. But we're also part of a vertical community, which means we are connected to every generation that came before us, and every generation that comes after. So we belong to this community, but the community also belongs to us. So we are not independent as much as we are interdependent. Wonderful word, interdependent. We can't lock each other in or out without locking ourselves in or out. We've got to learn to get along or we will not survive. Or even if we do survive, the world that we survive in is going to kind of look like a Mad Max movie. And I don't know about you, but that's not where I want to live. That's why learning how to practice constant, unconditional, spontaneous, inner-directed, loving kindness is the best way to make the world work. It just is. It just is. Now, nice idea, huh? Isn't that a great idea? So how do we do it? How do we do this? How do we do this so we can go out, just walk out the front door and walk up to anybody on the street and say, what kind of a world do you think this is? And they say, this is a kind and loving world and a kind and loving universe. How can we do that? I mean, I don't mean how do we do this with our neighbors and our friends or our family. You know, those people are just, yeah, you can be kind to them. It's very, very easy. You know them. But how do we learn to think of everyone, everywhere, all the time, including the politicians from the other party, whichever side you're on, okay? The terrorists, ISIS, all this stuff. The road ragers that we see going through the highways, the crooked CEOs and bankers and all these other people. How do we learn to think of them in a kind, loving, and compassionate way? Because like it or not, from a spiritual perspective, which is the only perspective that matters, nothing less will do. Nothing less will do, all right? Being kind is an all or nothing proposition. So the question is, again, how do we do it? How do we do it? Well, for one thing, we need to start focusing our collective worldwide attention in a very different direction. I don't want to get political, but look at our political choices over the last few years, okay? No matter what your political viewpoint happens to be, neither party in this country, okay, is doing a very good job. They really, really aren't in terms of getting results. And very few other countries have a lot to brag about either, so I'm not just poking fingers here. Unfortunately, instead of focusing on kindness and compassion, which would be far more productive socially, politically, economically, and every other way, most national and international priorities today are based on fear, selfishness, and insecurity. They really are. Fear, selfishness, and insecurity. Not health, not ending poverty or homelessness, not education, not for equal rights for people, not caring for the elderly, not caring for the children. So that's something that needs to change. That's one thing that needs to change. And there are a lot of different ways to do it. Once again, nobody's got the answer, but everybody together just might. Just might, all right? We need to wake up to the fact that kindness and compassion are not just nice things to talk about on Sunday morning. In fact, real kindness practiced at the international level in every country, in the United Nations, in all the organizations, and through every national and multinational government or non-government organization that covers most of the stuff, a focus on real kindness would probably do more to promote peace, prosperity, health, education, and advancement of science and technology throughout the world, without exception, than any other social political idea that ever existed. Ever, ever, ever. But we can't do it part way. All right? We can't be kind and compassionate towards one group of people while we're trying to destroy another group. It doesn't work. Einstein said you can't simultaneously prepare for war and peace at the same time. It's very, very difficult. I mean, now is this possible? All right? If we want it to work, it's got to be all or nothing, but is this possible? Where do we start? And this is where we get to us here in this room today, all right? I know I can be kinder. I really can, and more attentive. I try, but a few of you probably can be too, so maybe that's where it starts, with you and with me when we walk out of here this morning. Maybe we can start by changing our own individual focus. I mean, think about your past. What is the kindest thing that anyone has ever done for you? This afternoon, in a quiet moment, think about that. What's the kindest thing that you have ever done for anyone else? And what's the kindest thing you've ever done for yourself? And then what follows all of those is, have you done any of that lately? All right? Lately. So what can you do this week for someone? Anonymously, if possible. That's a really interesting component. What would it be if you could do something really kind anonymously for someone? Would it involve money? Would it involve time? Would it involve energy? Or would it just be listening? Just listening. Or saying thank you. Sometimes just saying thank you can be a powerful act of kindness to someone. It really, really can. Whatever you decide to do, don't limit your imagination. Go online to the Random Acts of Kindness thing and look through their 100 list. Okay, I did. It's absolutely fascinating. And don't worry about how your gift is received, all right, or what anyone else thinks about it, like Angela said with the four agreements, okay? Be proud of what you're doing, but not too proud. But not too proud, okay? And after you've done whatever it is you do, give thanks. Give thanks. Be grateful that you had something of value to offer and that there was someone there to receive it. That's where the gratitude comes in. Be grateful for the connection you just made, even if you're never going to see that person again. Finally, remember what Mother Teresa said, probably one of the kindest people of at least my generation. In her long prayer, she says this. I'm just going to read a little part of it. She says, "The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best that you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you have anyway." You see, she says, in the final analysis, it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Those are beautiful words from a kind and beautiful person, and they are the truth in your life, and they are the truth in mine. And so it is, and so it is. Thank you. All right. All right, let's just take a moment. A lot of ideas here, bringing up a lot of ideas in your own mind, all of us different. Take the ones that resonated. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later, and let's know this. Some people say that life is not kind and the universe is not kind. I don't agree. I believe that life and the universe are perfect kindness because they are perfectly supportive. They are a reflection of my thoughts and beliefs. So the deeper kindness goes in terms of my thoughts and my actions and my feelings, the deeper the universe responds. Simply by virtue of being here, I have been given the opportunity to make a difference in large ways and small. I have been given 7 billion people who are there to receive whatever I have to give, and who are able to share with me whatever they are willing to share. So as I know this and recognize this, I begin to transform my belief in the kind of world that is around me. I do not fear danger or hatred or any of these horrible things that I hear about because I know they have nothing to do with me. I focus my consciousness on the oneness of all people. I focus my awareness when I hear negativity on positive thoughts. When I hear anger, I think thoughts of peace. When I hear hatred, I feel compassion. Compassion that many people do not recognize the power they have to heal not only others, but to heal themselves. So I heal myself first. I heal myself of the negative thoughts that I learned as a child. I heal myself of the false ideas that I embraced as I was growing up, and I heal myself of any negative beliefs that I absorb from the noise around me. As a spiritual rock, not me, but the power in me supports me. It is stable, it is centered, and because I choose so, it is kind and loving. So I am a rock of kindness in the center of a raging river of a universe that's trying to wear me down. But it can't. It can't. Because I embrace all of humanity. I embrace the spirituality of all of humanity. And I embrace the spirituality that is me. This is my truth. I'm grateful for this awareness. I'm grateful for all the many opportunities I have throughout the day to support others and to support myself. And I accept this as the life I am creating, not just for me, but for everyone around me. I attract to me people who are kind and good and loving, and I return the same. So knowing this, I embrace the life I am creating. I embrace the world that can be, and I accept this greater idea for myself. I release this awareness into consciousness, knowing that it is now being created. It is the truth for me, not just in this moment, but in every moment going forward. Please join me in saying, and so it is.